hear that? This is madness.
With 900 years old, you reach understood you are not.
Nerf herder!
I am a Jedi.
Too short for a stormtrooper.
We have what they grow beyond.
Welcome back to the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. I am Mike, alongside a bunch of Stephanies. And you Stephanies out there, all I have to say to you is, cut it out. That was quite the pod, fellas.
Right?
And,
it really was. It really was.
There were pratfalls.
We did it for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was for you, Mike.
Sam was really holding it down pretty well until the transition from the first moment of John Williams and all that discussion, which was very much an emotional, in-depth, good insight conversation. But
thank you.
That transition, we just lost it there, guys. I don't know what happened.
I think as soon as I found an opening, I got in there and just started breaking things down.
Chris is he's a disruptor. He's chaos. he's an agent of chaos.
Yes, chaotic good. Chaotic good.
This week, we are sadly without Sam, so let's find ways that we can really disappoint Sam this time around.
Let's talk about James Bond the whole episode.
I hope the next Star Wars movie, they're on like a desert planet the whole time, so no one has to wear any outerwear. I'm sick of outerwear.
No more jackets.
No just more outerwear. Jackets. Hashtag no more jackets.
Well, guys, on this edition of the podcast, we are going to talk some current breaking news, a little bit that's been updated. We'll get into the Resistance, break down the latest episode, have a conversation about what we learned from the Disney Channel's show as it moves into its fourth episode, then get into our usual segments, Hot and Fresh with Chris. I know everyone is ready for it, looking forward to it. I do want to give my two cents, though, on the John Williams music cue from last week that you were all talking about. I actually will get to the cue in a second. When you were talking about, Ryan, your experience of going to, was it the Hollywood Bowl where you saw John Williams?
Yeah, it was. It was the Hollywood Bowl.
So it reminded me of, there's two probably monumental film moments in my life that I stand out and think about as a child, and I already brought up one of them on the podcast, and that was when I was seven, eight years old, and I watched the entire trilogy in one night at a sleepover.
Right.
The other one was when I went to go and see the Boston Pops in Cape Cod on the beach, and who happened to be conducting the Boston Pops but John Williams.
Wow.
He did his entire film catalog up to that point, which must have been maybe 1992, 93. No, you know what? It must have been after Jurassic Park, because I do recall Jurassic Park being a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
So he played through everything that essentially represented my childhood in movies. So we had Star Wars, we had Indiana Jones, Jaws, E.T. I mean, he's going through the entire catalog, and I'm leaving stuff out, but there's so much that just represented who I was as a kid that I think at that moment I thought that everything was kind of centered around my favorite things, because here were 1,000 people on a beach to listen to the music that I love from the films that I love. And I think it just took my love and passion for the medium of film and all that it entails, not just from the visuals, but to the score and the music that comes along with it, that I was transported and forever changed by that concert with John Williams.
Wow. Wow. I think that's a testament to John Williams in itself.
Mike, that kind of succinct, poignant storytelling is what the podcast is missing, man.
I was just shocked at how complete a journey that was through John.
I was like, oh, he made his point. And then he stopped. And that was Mike. That's how
it's really
done.
That's really beautiful, though. No, you're right.
That is really that's a beautiful thing. And as someone else who's seen him conduct live, it really is an amazing experience.
I gotta put that's on my bucket list now.
You might want to hurry. It's
fair.
It's just, it really highlights, and we touched on this last week, the amount, just the pure volume of work that he's done that is iconic. Is astounding.
Which we can't even go through and list all of it right now. You even talked about Tintin in the last episode.
Yeah.
And I thought, I haven't even seen Tintin, and I need to because it's John Williams, it's Steven Spielberg, and what am I doing?
Yeah.
Here's a PSA, actually. Here's a PSA to the world. Tintin, really good movie.
Yeah. I really enjoyed Tintin.
Simon Pegg and Nick Frost.
Forgotten the time, but...
We can...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, rest. Simon Pegg and Nick Frost.
We can rest a little easy knowing there are reports that he is recovering well and he's doing better. So that's good.
Glad to hear that.
Very glad to hear that. Yeah. Yeah, that's just wonderful news. And also, I'm sure he's excited to appear on the pod, as we promised.
Right, exactly.
We mentioned that. You mentioned the microphone is sitting and waiting. I'm looking at it in front of me. We'll be ready.
We'll be ready for him.
Sending our best and happy that he's recovering.
I did not take the time to think specifically about a cue that I love, so I feel like I'm dropping the ball here because I did want to follow up with one. There's so many, but I really was fascinated by the conversation about Luke returning to Aunt Beru and Uncle Owen and all of the themes that are played in that moment. And I haven't had a chance because I just listened today. I haven't had a chance to go back and watch that scene again, but I'm really going to keep an ear out. And the one thing that I did also consider, as you talked about all the different scores from the films, Rian Johnson releasing The Last Jedi with a score version only, I would like to see every single Star Wars film in that format.
Yeah, wouldn't that be cool?
Especially when you talked about the prequels, because I could do without some of that dialogue and just John Williams' score.
Yeah, well, someone's pulling their weight on the writing in those prequels.
Rian, are you sitting down?
I'm not sure our listenership can survive another Rian fainting.
The amount of headphones we broke last week.
Pratfalls are really the best joke for radio/podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, what's so cool about what's happening with Star Wars directors now is that everybody is like getting their shot to work with John Williams.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's one of the huge kind of like draws of it, is that they're like, oh my god, I'll get to work with John Williams on this. So it's you know, the reverence with which people are presenting it, like you said, Rian Johnson doing the score only version, it's like there's a reverence there that couldn't be present from George Lucas, because he kind of came up with him.
Yep.
And they're all very aware of it. And you know, it's about time. The guy's like in his late 80s and he's been giving us just the music of our lives for years. So
and it hasn't fallen off. I feel like we initially, maybe when we started this podcast, I think I thought, oh, The Force Awakens, the score is fine, I enjoy it, but it doesn't have as much. No, I believe we brought it up that I can't usually recognize how wonderful and beautiful his score is on a first viewing. Mm-hmm. And I think that has to do with me really trying to keep up with the plot and not paying as much attention to the music. Well, as you listen back to it,
it's also so one of those kind of things where it's like, if you do something right, it feels like you haven't done anything at all. Like it fits so seamlessly into the rest of the film that it's like, it would almost be worrisome if like it calls out to itself, you know?
Yeah. Like they always say, like the best film editing is the editing you don't notice.
Right. Yeah. That's kind of
Like Ray's theme is as iconic as anything else he's ever written.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Kylo's theme as well.
Oh, for sure.
That introduction of Rey in The Force Awakens and that music is one of the most like magical, like whimsical start of a fantasy tale I've ever seen. Like it reminds me of almost like Miyazaki type levels of like just wonderment. Is wonderment a word?
It is, it is today. Now, buddy.
It is today. I was trying to think when I mentioned before, like how the themes and each character has different themes. I was thinking as a kid, I was like, how did I think of that? It wasn't from the films. It was actually from the Game Gear game for Star Wars. Have you ever played that? The Star Wars Game Gear game?
No, I don't think so.
It's really difficult and it feels kind of incomplete. But each character, when you would change characters, had their theme. And that's when I started to associate each character with their theme. As I was watching A New Hope and I was like, there's no way I picked this out when I watched it. And I was like, how did I know? And then it was the Game Gear game. Pick it up. Go to your local game swap and pick up
because they're not coming out with a Game Gear classic anytime soon.
Yeah, exactly. Pick up a Game Gear color screen.
One other thing that you mentioned as you went into episode 9 Hot and Fresh Takes last week with Chris is that everyone's clearing out, Rian, I believe you were saying, the time frame around the release of episode 9.
They're making way.
Yes.
I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jumanji 2 is not afraid. I think it's still opening either the week before or the week of.
I mean, are they keeping the same cast?
Yes. You got The Rock and you got Kevin Hart.
I think
you're not moving for you. You bow to no one.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a smart move too, because that's in the realm of Star Wars, and it did. It's not in the realm of Star Wars, but it's in the realm of like a fantastical adventure.
Well, in terms
kind
of cultural excitement, I'd say it's within the realm of Star
Wars. Yeah, exactly, really? Exactly. And I could see. No. Well, I mean, I think the first one did really well. I mean, I think it's a good family movie. It's a good alternative if the theaters are full.
Do you think anyone's having panic attacks about the release of Jumanji 2?
I hope not.
There's someone out there, a big Rock fan for their entire life.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's going to be as big as Star Wars. I just mean, I think it's a good runoff movie. If it's
well, there is, there are, like, usually those weekends that a Star Wars comes out or an Infinity War comes out, there's usually, like, one thing that, I don't think Jumanji is far enough away, but there's usually, like, one thing that kind of counterbalances
it.
Yeah,
the counter-programming. You know,
like, there's, like an Apatow movie or something where it's, these two demographics don't overlap very much.
Yeah. It's like when you're watching football on a Sunday, the channels that don't get NFL football put on bowling.
Yeah.
That's right.
Get a little... Get that
and you know
football
what, man?
Bowling spinoff.
You know what, man? I'm a knee brace and fingerless gloves kind of guy. Bring on the bowling.
Chris, I believe you had some of the news that has really surfaced this week about a project that is not moving forward, unfortunately, in the Star Wars universe.
We have some news about what something may have been.
What will be that never was. Entertainment Weekly sources.
Kind of the crux of the podcast.
Have confirmed the film... About Boba Fett, did we mention last week that we did. We talked that Boba Fett was canceled, so everybody knows that. They are saying the possibility of resurrection remains. So it could still be on the table. I think they're probably holding off a little bit. This is my own personal take for The Mandalorian, as we mentioned last week. But it is rumored that the movie would have focused on Fett and the menagerie of bounty hunters who appeared alongside him on the deck of the Star Destroyer in The Empire Strikes Back. It is originally being developed for director Josh Trank, who left the project amid the turmoil and aftermath of his Fantastic Four reboot. So do you think there's some weird, ruling or contract or something where it's like, well, the only way he can't do this movie is if they shut it down and have to reopen it or something like that? My mind always goes to
contracts? You mean like... I don't know, because James Mangold was attached. It didn't seem like the Trank. I would be very surprised if Lucasfilm wrote up a contract that strong-armed themselves that much.
Yeah, that would be pretty bizarre.
But I think it's interesting because, I mean, you know, obviously I want more Star Wars movies and I'd be happy to see a Boba Fett movie. But to me, that seems a little bit like riding the coattails of something. Empire so much.
Missed the mark of what people would want that to be. I mean, that seems a little strange, and it's just such trodden territory. It's like,
and that's the thing about Solo to me is that I'm like, show me, even if you're using characters I know, like, show me things I haven't seen.
Well, I mean, there's even the Boba Fett, the cartoon from the Christmas special, which takes a place talking
Chris,
like Mario.
If we could go a day without you bringing up that Boba Fett cartoon.
I love it. It takes place around that time as well, so it's kind of, I don't know, I feel like I'm almost glad knowing this that they canceled it, because I think they would have missed the mark. I wonder if they were trying to do like Rogue One is the New Hope movie, Boba Fett is the Empire movie, and then they would have found like a Jedi movie to run alongside.
I see.
I see what you're trying to say.
And my inclination there is I'm glad that that did not happen. I think that, there's so much room in between these sagas. They should just be focusing on that.
Chris, you make me think about, though, the cinematic universe phases, as you talk about with Marvel. Mm-hmm. Phase one in the universe, now if you think of the separate side stories as a phase, did not work out. So what's the next phase of these movies? Maybe they actually try to lean into what we've talked about, which is more original stories with characters we maybe do know, rather than doing something that feels tied in, as we've talked about several times, to other parts of the franchise.
Yeah. I mean, I think that makes complete sense. I'm really wondering if they're trying to kind of clear a path here for The Mandalorian. I feel like they're putting a lot of weight behind it. I feel like they want that to be the focus.
I also think they're playing the long game a little bit. Here's going to be my hot and fresh, but it's a corporate hot and fresh.
Let's hear it.
I think that episode 9 comes out 2019, correct? Yes. December 2019. I think that The Mandalorian, I don't think, they obviously don't have a release for that yet, but I think that The Mandalorian becomes the thing that, you know, Star Wars becomes a TV property for a little bit. And I think we don't see another Star Wars film until at earliest 2022.
Wow.
Okay.
I think that what they're going to do is create a demand and then have an event film.
Yep.
Because I think that they're playing the long game here. I think they know that they have a, you know, billions dollar property on their hands and that Star Wars has endured now for 40 years. So they just, you know, we're in a phase where they didn't want to oversaturate it. They took everything off the slate. Yep. And then I think they're going to, you know, have some, you know, solid, oh my God, I'm trying to think of a sports analogy, some solid doubles on television.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they're going to come out swinging again, whether that's with Rian Johnson's new trilogy, whether that's with the Benioff and Weiss thing.
Yeah.
But I do think that they're just kind of like, all right, let's slow down. You know, we have to think about this as in the long term.
Yeah.
And I think that that's, you know, a smart move, especially when I heard what the Boba Fett idea was.
I would like that if they cooled down a little bit, kind of took the lessons learned. And I mean, that's enough time to also get like actual feedback. I feel like it's probably the inclination there is probably to grab the feedback as it's happening and make decisions on it. But I feel like with this franchise, you need to kind of sit and wait how fans digest it before you can start making decisions on it, because different generations of people are going to interpret it way different.
Everything you both are saying is incredibly logical, but they have to report to the stockholders.
Yep.
And when you don't have on the books the huge box office and revenue that comes from a Star Wars movie, they'll obviously have the Marvel movies.
Yeah.
But when you think about what they did in 2017 with Last Jedi, followed up by the Avengers, to have those places marked in the year, like you have to be hitting those goals each year.
Yeah.
You can't leave off something like Star Wars at the box office for too long.
Well, here's another thing, though. They just acquired Fox, or they will be acquiring Fox. So they have to be doing revenue quickly because they're, you know, $60 billion in the red.
Yeah. Yes. They're a little cash poor now.
But so they have the Marvel movies coming up. They're essentially probably going to relaunch the Marvel Cinematic Universe in one way or another, in terms of kind of like at least like a new chapter in it.
Yeah.
And then with Fox comes Avatar. So that means that they have three giant benchmark movies that at least they think are going to be huge. I don't know if by the time Avatar 2 comes out, if anyone cares about Avatar anymore.
I mean, I predict that Avatar 2, though, is going to be like a whole new thing. Like,
I mean,
you might as well call it Avatar 1. Like,
James Cameron,
they're changing the font, guys.
This,
yeah, they're going to change the font.
James Cameron always tends to do this thing where he has a movie coming out and everybody's like, I don't know about this one. And then it's the biggest movie in the world ever.
I remember just like digging online for hours to find one like still of the set. The way like they were talking about it, they're like, we've never seen anything look like this. I remember like, I need to see what this looks like 4 years before they even like showed anything of the movie.
Well, I think I'll be interested to see how it plays out with Avatar on its own, but how it all plays together. You do have to remember, people are very excited about the new Avatar park at Disney.
Yeah.
Which is interesting to me, because you probably couldn't get me to go there with so many other things at Disney that I'd like to see.
Oh, I'm going to get you to go there, Mike. All right, when we're there for Galaxy's Edge, we're going on that ride where you have to go find the Navi lady that is the most impressive animatronic I've ever seen in my life.
I can't wait to see
that. Oh, wait,
that.
You have seen it? Or you've just
seen
the video?
I've seen it on the
YouTube. Oh, in that commercial, yeah.
Yeah.
I need to see that.
Hey, YouTube, it's truly, I mean, it's unbelievable.
Not the one that's in the tank, but the actual one that there's one that's functioning and out.
There's one who's like singing some kind of Navi song and stuff. It's like a dark ride, you know?
Okay.
When do we find out that the Avatar world is actually part of the Star Wars universe as well?
Well, when Patton Oswalt's entire prediction comes true.
Right, right. Is that one of his predictions?
I think it's when Rey or Finn says, we got to get all the unobtainium we could find.
Because, I mean, they almost talk about that in Solo. The
coaxium?
The coaxium. So since it
isn't
is Halloween,
that when I used to hook up my VCR to my TV?
Yep, the red, yellow, and white. Yeah, the coaxium cables. Since it is almost Halloween, it is worth mentioning one of my favorite Spielberg movies, scored by John Williams, E.T., has a very good Our World Star Wars connection, which some theorize that the E.T. universe takes place in the Star Wars universe.
Because E.T. recognizes Yoda?
That's you just took the words right out of my mouth.
Oh, no, I'm so sorry. I didn't know you were, like, building. I thought, I'm so sorry.
So in E.T., when they're going trick-or-treating, the kids are running, and they see somebody dressed up as Yoda.
Oh, yeah.
E.T. points at Yoda and says, home, home. Oh. And then in Ryan, Ryan?
That's not a completely
Ryan,
accurate depiction of that scene.
And then they eat Reese's Pieces in that scene, I believe.
And Yoda loved Reese's Pieces, Chris.
And then a young Drew Barrymore screams. Is that all the same scene?
Yeah, yeah. And then E.T. goes, I'll be right there.
And then he goes, I'll be back. He doesn't. He point at Yoda and says, oh.
I'm
paraphrasing.
Being very nitpicky.
Let's hear it.
He doesn't say home. He sees Yoda, and then he kind of throws his arms up and tries to, like, hug him, kind of. He, like, walks at him.
I see.
The kid dresses Yoda. It really wasn't worth correcting you. I'm sorry.
He points at Yoda and says, I live there. And
he points at Yoda and he says, cinematic universe.
But then in one of the prequels, which one is it?
Attack of the Clones.
In Attack of the Clones, while they sit and discuss in a committee, E.T., there's one of those little pods. It's full of E.T. aliens.
Yeah.
I thought that's where you were going the entire time, Chris. I was not aware of the moment in E.T.
It's just further proof.
A lot of
it's
proof.
It's actually,
proof.
If you know, it's like a strange thing because when you watch it like now, because Star Wars is so like part of our cultural lexicon, it's like it's like someone drinking Coca-Cola. It doesn't even register as anything. But like when I watched it as an adult, it's so funny because I was watching it thinking like, I bet there were so many film students at that time just like rolling their eyes being like, corporate crap.
right. Now we're all like, give it to me. But also it would be weird if that was true because he plays with Star Wars toys.
Yeah, he plays with Boba Fett.
So it's like in that world, not only do they share a universe, but the stories became so famous.
In the E.T. world, Star Wars is a documentary.
It's a documentary. It's like a famous war story that they made toys about.
So what you're saying is in the eventual crossover between the Tom Holland Spider-Man, where he's playing and has Star Wars toys on his wall and a Lego Star Wars Death Star, he's also in the same universe.
Exactly. I do love that Disney now throws a Star Wars thing in almost every Marvel movie.
There's also in J.J. Abrams' Star Trek, when they... Sam's going to be so mad.
Oh, boy.
When they go to... he's going to be really mad. The first mission in the first Star Trek movie, I believe they're going to Vulcan. Mm-hmm. They drop out of warp speed into a debris field, and there is an R2-D2 in it.
That's perfect.
So now we're the singularity is approached.
Wow, it's
where
happening.
Everyone's
it's
everywhere.
Happening. And then... Indiana Jones. Some of the hieroglyphs around one of the tombs, temples thing has C-3PO and R2-D2.
Oh, yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Which Indiana Jones?
I believe.
Crystal Skull, right?
No, it's not the Crystal Skull, is it?
That's Chris. That is Chris's favorite one.
It's the only one I acknowledge.
Well, you love nuking a fridge.
Hold on. It might be Crystal Skull, actually.
Chris is a huge Mutt fan. He loves Mutt.
Is it Mutt Williams? Is Williams his last name?
I'll tell you what.
I don't know.
It's Raiders.
Mutt Jones.
It's in Raiders.
Is it? Well, it was 81, you know.
It's a little hieroglyph, and it shows some kind of Egyptian character putting his hands on R2-D2 along with C-3PO.
How fun.
Yeah. So they're all connected, you see?
Guys, Sam led the audience to believe that I would keep this podcast on track when I returned, and I think I got to get us back on track here.
This was just all the hot. This was Chris's spooky, old, and stale.
Oh no!
I couldn't remember the opposite of the word fresh. I could not remember the opposite of the word fresh.
There was a new episode of The Resistance that just premiered on Sunday night. We're going to talk about it. And actually, going forward, I'm going to give a brief recap. I have not done my preparation to do a brief recap right now. I'm just letting everyone know in the next episode, I will do a recap. But to give you a rundown of the basics of this episode, Kaz, continuing his mission as a spy, finds out that there might be a supply drop coming from the First Order, and the leader of the station, Dozer, could potentially be working with the First Order, and he wants to find out more. So while the power is continuing to flicker on and off, he makes his way up to the Aces Tower by help of his team and meeting with the brand new character that we got a chance to meet in Hype Faison. That's where he lands himself in some trouble with the First Order and has to find his way out. And guys, this episode, probably one of the stronger ones we've seen so far. I appreciated several moments in it, but one thing that stood out to me, and I wonder if you felt the same, there's a certain point where Neeku might be wearing thin. The jokes, I get it, and his role, but then when they were making the jokes about the tower, up there, up in the tower, I was like, all right, we got a little bit too much there.
I kind of like the joke where he's like, it looks like he's having a good time, and he's like walking along the wall. I did appreciate that.
Yeah, I like Neeku. I think it's clear that they're going for like a lighter tone with this whole series.
Mm-hmm.
And I like him, but I understand, Mike, that like that he could become a little great.
It's a little distracting. Yeah, sometimes it kind of stifles things moving forward.
Well, also, if he's the joke that kind of halts things every time, you know, when he ends up, I'm going to go talk to the First Order. I'm going to find out. That can be just one note.
Sure.
You know, you don't get, I mean, it's a one-note character anyway, but just one note in terms of the plot.
We'll get a Neeku episode.
I bet it'll be like the one that wins an Emmy.
Right. It's kind of like the Xander episode of Buffy.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, we don't know what Neeku does behind the scenes.
I think I'm really enjoying the show. I think that they're obviously going for a lighter tone, and I accept that, and that's great. I do think there are I've noticed that, like, visually I think it's like inconsistent from scene to scene. Some scenes I see, and like, you know, obviously all the animators are doing great work, but, you know, just as an observation, sometimes the aesthetic really works. I think it works really well when things are in motion. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes the aesthetic starts to seem a little rudimentary. You know, it just like doesn't look quite there yet. So I'm interested to see how that kind of progresses. Because, you know, animation, they always, you know, the last season of Clone Wars looks better than the first. They, you know, they're always advancing the technology and stuff. So I am curious to see how the aesthetic evolves while staying consistent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like when you have such a defined visual style, that's like, especially in like a 3D realm, that sometimes when you want to do something that's simple, or like, I think a good example in this episode, maybe of what you're talking about, is like how when they go up in the tower and it's all like white looking, and as opposed to kind of like the gritty dirtness, it just looked very like bland. Like it didn't look, because they were like hyping up how nice this lounge was, and then when they went up there, like it didn't feel like it was.
It was Cloud City. It just looked like Cloud City.
Yeah, a little bit. I guess I just wanted more of a cozier aspect.
What was the general reaction to the addition of Hype Faison as a name that is the actor's name?
I like it. I mean, I think they're doing a good job of establishing like who these pilots are, and like it reminds me a little bit of almost kind of like Pacific Rim type thing, where it's like these people are famous in their own like little circle, and I think it's fun to build out that world, these characters. It's gonna be a slow burn, but I feel like by like season two or three, we're gonna know like what kind of pilots these people are, and when they're doing missions and things like that, it's gonna be kind of good that we don't have to learn all this new information.
I agree.
Not much else to be added there.
Yeah. it's a cool show. I like
the show a lot. I'm hyped on it. I think I think the story is only going to get better. I just love this water, this strange like city.
I think it's cool how contained it is. That they're like, it's just going to be like this one place and then it'll be even more exciting when it opens up.
Exactly. And yeah,
when he learns to become a better pilot and expands beyond.
I love the idea that there are places that like certain characters can't go. It just like kind of adds that mystery to what is this place. It's like they still don't know what's up there. And it kind of creates this weird kind of like almost like a caste system within Star Wars or something like that, which happens occasionally in the Star Wars universe. What's like what was the underground they were proposing?
Yeah.
The one thing I do want to mention about Hype Faison, he's like, I'm not in on helping the First Order with their shipments into the Colossus. That's not my job. I'm not part of that. But being in the Aces Lounge and seeing the cozy life he has to realize that by just letting it happen, he's complicit. You know, really got to dig deep into the ethics of these characters on a show that is animated on Disney XD. That's what I want to talk about.
We'll see the moral choices.
That's what XD stands for, extreme dichotomy.
It is interesting, though. That is another kind of interesting fact where it's like very similar to Cloud City. That's just like, oh, Lando like can just deal with the Empire. He doesn't have to be afraid of them at first, obviously. I wonder if that's the same for this place.
Going back to the animation, did anyone notice the flapping of the collar of Kaz as he was outside following his escape from the First Order? At a nice moment where the lapel was flapping back and forth, and all I thought was, Sam, you got another moment for the jackets here. And we're talking about it without him on the pod, and I am sorry.
Now
Sam.
It's gone. It's passed. It's gone.
Can't do it. We're not
now
allowed.
We can't talk about jackets at all.
As per our rules, you can never talk about a past episode of the podcast.
We go into double indemnity rules. You can't talk about the same thing twice.
Not allowed. Not allowed on the pod.
That's going to make for a very difficult way to fill the time until episode 9. Yeah.
Not well, a lot.
We're okay
of,
with silence. Not I think a lot last. Of, I think last week's episode proved that we're fine with just letting it sit there.
I do want to bring up, I think it was a little unfair on the slow on the intake, slow on the uptake joke from Chris. Oh. I really appreciate it. I thought that was some quick thinking, Chris. I liked slow on the intake.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
I was laughing. Somebody there was a lot of silence on the pod.
Yeah.
I'm glad you brought this up, Mike, because I actually have a list of all the jokes I think didn't get their due diligence or the reaction I think they should have gotten.
Let's go.
If we could just go, we'll just go through these one by one.
Star Wars, A Force Sleeps, right?
3.5 hour
episode. Not a lot of flying in this episode, which kind of bummed me out. I want him to get in those planes more.
Sorry, I just had this thought that I was like, are we going to talk about what this episode didn't have?
Yeah. But I got to see a good dogfight before the end of this season. That's one of my goals.
I think you will, buddy.
I think you kind of got one at the beginning in the opening where Poe and Kaz are working with that TIE fighter.
All right, can you help me out here? What exactly happened at the beginning of the series? How did Kaz get...
How did Poe decide to put a spy on the station who doesn't know how to spy?
What was Kaz doing at the beginning of the series?
He was taking a hidden message back to the Resistance about the First Order or Secret
Order. Okay.
Right? That was it, wasn't it, Ryan?
And then he got...
I think so.
Then his fleet got attacked.
He let them jump into hyperspace. That's when Poe arrived, and his ship was dismantled. It was shot, and so he couldn't move. Mm-hmm. But then he had Poe direct the TIE fire back into his path so he could shoot him with his blasters be able to disable that ship before it then jumped to hyperspace.
Okay. Isn't it funny how like we're like talking about like, listen, this is a show for kids and like it's a lighter tone, and then we're like, wait a second, I really don't know what's happening.
Yeah, exactly. Like I was confused in that fact, and I didn't want to like, I don't know, I guess I was too lazy just to go back and rewatch.
I'm just so
Chris
sick
is a safe place.
So sick of Star Wars being dumbed down for all these kids.
Yeah.
Also, I wish I could follow it because I don't know what's going on.
One cool thing I do like in the Star Wars universe, and they did it in this episode, was
lightsabers.
Set the stun saber light set the stuns, set the phasers to stun.
Blasters?
Whoa, oh, set the blasters to stun.
Oh,
sorry, Sam.
God. Oh my god.
We referenced Star Trek too much here. We set the blasters to stun, and I love that you could always recognize the blasters as the little circle thing, as opposed to the beam.
I'm sorry, I'm just imagining like a message board somewhere that just exploded.
Oh, no. That's just ripping me apart. Watch this Reddit thread eviscerate Chris.
This pod is really not worth listening to. Anybody notice that Captain Dozer sounded a little bit like a sound-alike for Edward James Olmos? I don't believe it's him, but it felt like the voice actor was trying to pull it off.
I did think it was weird that he kept talking about Cylons.
Would you say it's Edward James almost?
I like it, Chris. I'll give you a tip of my cat.
Thank you very much. A tip of the cat, the official.
So say we all.
So say we all.
All right, let's move on. We've got ourselves another go-around of the hot and fresh from Chris. Can you lead us in, Ryan? Give us that wonderful music.
Chris has got a hot and fresh take. Chris has got a hot and fresh take for you and episode 9.
Interior. Night. Dozers. What's that guy's name? Dozer? Is that the most recent? Was it the recent guy?
The most recent name said on the podcast? Yes.
Yeah, yeah, Dozer.
Is the script negotiating with itself?
Yes. Okay. This is all dialogue. Somebody's in a raise in a ship saying, is it Dozer? What's the name? All right. Dozer's ship lands on Jakku. The doors open. It's Kaz and Neeku. And they have this little relic. And then the gate opens. And all of a sudden, Kaz gets shot. Dozer gets shot. Neeku grabs the little relic and runs. Runs into this little village. And he hands it to the guy's name. I can't remember. Max Ben
The
Sinai.
Vicar?
What's his name?
The Vicar is his name in the universe.
Really?
Yeah.
This will begin to make things right?
Yeah, Max von Sydow is...
He's the vicar. He hands the vicar the little relic, and it's the thing that he hands Poe.
That was his code name. Like, he has a real name somewhere.
Oh, he has a real name. But the vicar, so that ties the two universes together.
So we've got another flashback, is what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is the beginning of episode 9. This is the second beginning.
I like that there's an introduction of two characters that most people who are watching the movie would have never heard of, and they die right away.
Exactly. And then that resistance thing flies on screen.
That was the hot and fresh take.
I got to say, that might be my worst one. That might be the worst one. I couldn't remember any character's name.
Oh, man. Go easy on yourself. You've had way worse ones than that.
Can you imagine, though, if they tie them together? They will.
They'll tie them together in the background with one moment where you see probably
Bucket.
Neeku just like
Bucket.
Working on a ship. Yeah,
Bucket. Yeah, you'll see Bucket. Well,
Bucket is Chopper. I think we've all figured that out.
I believe I'm a fan of that theory, yeah.
I also still am very happy to have found that my joke about the mustachioed man who's always in the cantina has continued to be true. He is always there and always
He's having a great time there.
It's also great that there's a kid's show that is encouraging anytime there's like, oh, well, down moment, power's not working, what are we going to do? Go drink.
I noticed that, and then all of a sudden I was like, might be why it's on at 10 o'clock on Sundays.
Just all the drinking.
Yeah, all the drinking.
Because the alcohol abuse. Oh, all right. I don't think we have other segments for this week because without Sam, we just can't go through segments without a That's My Jacket.
Mine doesn't take much preparation, just so you
know. We know, Chris.
Dozer?
But Ryan, I know you have been mulling around on possibly changing your segment. What are you thinking about for going forward on what you're going to focus on our weekly segments?
So, the KOTOR proved too much of a challenge for me to commit to. So now my new segment, which will be implemented next episode, will be digging into Star Wars history. So this can encompass it could be a catch-all, but really what it means is digging into kind of forgotten aspects of Star Wars history, whether it's going to be, you know, little bits of the holocron that we forgot about, or little bits about characters that people may not be aware of, or significant things that happen in Star Wars history, you know, at any given time. There's a long gap in the 80s where Star Wars wasn't at the forefront of pop culture, but things mm-hmm. were still happening, and I want to find out those things, and I want to bring it to our audience. So that's what my new segment is going to be about. It doesn't have a title yet. I want to come up with something punny, and I need some time to do that. So, you know, so just I think a week should be enough.
Minor bit more preparation than what Chris is putting in.
Just a little How about, bit.
I got it. How about I love the Star Wars 80s or something like that? You know, remember that show that were on VH1?
Yeah, I'll write that down.
People love those.
You know, I'll write that down.
I love the 80s Star Wars edition.
Yeah, no, I'm going to write that down.
I love the 70s Star Wars edition.
Mm-hmm. Writing it all down. This is gold.
Actually, now that I think about it, I do have some Galaxy's Edge news that I want to bring in. The Millennium Falcon has taken shape in the park. You can see it from satellite photos. It is not complete.
This is Mike's personal satellite that he has planted above the park.
Oh, if only that were
true. You have to bounce it off a few Russian satellites, but you get there. Right,
it's
you
worth
get
it. It's worth it. Well, the Falcon has started to take shape, which means the park continues to make progress. We are getting dangerously close to this all being a reality. And with that also in mind, I don't believe I brought up on the pod, they are moving the Jedi training, which has been a fixture of Disney World and Disneyland for young kids to do, I think, a 5-hour training and show where they learn how to become a Jedi. That has now been not canceled, but they have shut it down temporarily with the thought that it would then return once the new park opens up. And having known someone who has a 7-year-old who went and did this, it is one of those experiences that sticks with you for a young kid. It's a little sad there's going to be this interim where they may not have it, and they'll have to be a new iteration. But these are part of the changes that we're seeing with Star Wars and Galaxy's Edge and the way it's being part of the Disney parks.
They're starting to consolidate it all so the story is concise.
It's very exciting. And Mike, you know, like, your son's going to grow up in a world where Star Wars Land always existed.
that's a beautiful thing. Well, it's a beautiful thing.
And at some point, I will learn I would imagine Darth Plagueis has some way to switch bodies with your child so you can become them, right?
Is that one of the things? Familiar with the tale of Darth Plagueis? Mike, I just find it odd that you keep mentioning, like, children's and 7-year-olds can do it, and some adults.
If anyone's wondering, the cutoff for the it's Jedi 30. Academy is I know that it's younger than 30, apparently.
It's now 32. Due to legal reasons.
Once you're old enough to become president, you're not allowed to do the Jedi Academy.
You got to make the choice.
Hey, presidents aren't qualified as well. We know that. They wouldn't be able to make it in the Jedi Academy.
I'd rather have one of those kids at the Jedi Academy running the country right now.
Honestly.
At least they're being taught virtues. I mean, we don't have to get political, but...
Yeah,
I'm going to be honest, guys. I really don't like Donald Trump.
I think you're in good company.
Hey, Ryan, from my point of view, the Jedi are evil. You think he's going to say that? From my point of view, the Jedi are evil.
And Chris, that is not that far out of the realm of possibility that could be brought up in something he says at one point. Yeah. A tweet.
It would be the least upsetting thing he said.
Well, I think that pretty much does it for this edition of the pod. Guys, if we want to harmonize on the way out like you did last week, I'm on board.
Hello and welcome to the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast.
And that was the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast.
That'll do it for the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Sam, we'll catch you next week. Let's get a little bit more of that jacket.
Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, email us droidspod@gmail.com.
Thank you, Chris. I'm not doing my hosting duties very well.
Keep letting us know if the podcast works. Let us know if you heard this.
Sam, we miss you. We're looking forward to having you. The unrelated guys, when we're done recording, do you want to talk about Star Trek for another 2 or 3 hours?
Yep. I think that'd be great. Only tonight, though. Only see tonight. On the
other side. It's one time, remember? You can't do things twice.
One time only. We have what they grow beyond. Annie? You boys want to go to medieval times?
Why does that not get old?